Every time he would launch into a monologue about why the internet was bad, I would reflexively grab my iPad.
Oh, he's like, Bo's going to take it away.
And I would open a mobile game and be like, well, how would I play Homescape if you took that away? So consider.
I do love the idea that Bo Burnham is going to personally reach out of the Netflix app and take your phone
away
from you.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I can see it.
He's right, but I need my little games.
As he was saying that, I was like, come on, we get it. We all know. And then he got to calling people in Silicon Valley bug-eyed salamanders. And I was like, you got me back. You got me. I'm Max Fisher.
I'm Jon Favreau.
This is a series we're calling the Offline Movie Club. Every episode, we watch a beloved movie, then discuss how that movie reflects or shapes how we think about technology and the internet. And with us this week, Jamie Loftus, comedian and writer, author of the hilarious bestseller Raw Dog, The Naked Truth About Hot Dogs. What's up, Jamie?
I'm so excited to be here. I love an excuse to watch a movie and pause it every 3 seconds and yell at my boyfriend about why I'm right about the previous 3 seconds.
It's a great excuse to be on your phone throughout a movie and say, no, it's good. It's for work this time.
Yeah, it's research. I don't have an attention problem.
So you are, as both a person who is offline, but also running a podcast currently called 16th Minute about the internet.
Yes. So I was really excited to revisit this in particular. My new show is a weekly show that profiles a different character of the day every week. Generally, we'll either talk with them if they want to, or if they want to disappear, that's fine. And then we'll talk to experts like you, Max Fisher, who know a lot about the internet and why stories sort of popped off or were like sorted and algorithmically fed to us when they were, and if that means anything.
What a great idea for a podcast.
It's a great idea
Thank
for a podcast
you.
I love that Jamie stole from me.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this is the confrontation.
And then Max's lawyer team just walked in.
they're coming in. That's right.
Has anyone ever been served on a podcast? That would be really awesome.
Well, you just ruined the surprise.
Wow. Content is amazing. That's what I learned from this movie and what I learned from getting sued by you here today.
Yes. So speaking of absolutely wild real life content, this week we're talking about Inside, the one-man show that comedian, musician, filmmaker Bo Burnham recorded in his little home studio over the course of a year during the pandemic, mostly the 2020 lockdown. It's songs and skits. It's funny and sad. And it's a time capsule from the absolute worst time in many of our lives. I'm excited to chat with you guys about it. So just to start, I want to ask both of you, and maybe John, you can start us off. Like, what to you makes this movie important?
Well, we probably wouldn't be sitting here talking without this movie because
really?
It was maybe the biggest inspiration for Offline.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. So I had been thinking about a podcast where I was like, I want to do like an interview show, but I feel like it needs to be about like how the internet broke our brains. But is that like a real topic? And then as I was thinking about that, Inside came out and I watched it and I was like, this is totally a podcast.
Oh,
there's a million topics. There's a million different angles here. We should do it.
It does feel like it's a show that's very evocative of a specific moment where we all realize that the internet like really is that bad for us.
Yes. And it was, I think, the first like movie special, whatever, to really dig into that, at least that I've seen. And so I think it's so far the best movie I've seen about the internet and also the best movie I've seen about what it was like to be inside during the pandemic or to be sort of isolated during the pandemic. So it is a good time capsule for that. And I think that it captures like what it's like to have your brain broken by the internet and social media, which is what we talk about here all the time.
Right. Jamie, what do you think?
Ooh, I came to this as first and foremost, a longtime Bo Burnham fan. One of my favorite fun facts to tell people about myself in college was that Bo Burnham was a senior when I was a freshman and we were in the same drama competition.
Wow.
And he played like King Lear, I think. And I stood so far away from him and I was like, what? Because he was like a famous internet child.
Were you in college together?
No,
oh,
no.
Is this high school?
I think it was like a regional drama competition, just like big time loser stuff. And so he was doing like high school Shakespeare. I was playing like a flamingo in like a show about Aesop's Fables. It was all, you know, terrible, bad.
I didn't realize there was a flamingo in any of the fables.
Well, it was a reimagining, Max.
Okay,
so
got it.
This fable was a little different.
Aesop and South Beach.
yeah, it was a Floridian reimagining. I was not very good, so I was in the background. So maybe I was just doing flamingo as a creative choice. Like, I didn't really have a part, but I had to be on stage. So I just sort of would lift my leg and look on attentively. Anyways, I'm sure he saw me, noticed me, and was like, ugh, I'm too shy to talk to her.
I think it's inspired his entire body of work, is seeing you as the flamingo.
Yeah, he's like, who is that 14-year-old who was basically not visible on stage as flamingo? But anyways, I was like really into his work ever since he started on YouTube, and he's like such a fascinating artist to follow now, almost like 20 years into his career. I think like he's so creative. He's so interesting. I like that he goes away for long periods of time and really seems to like think and process and come back with something completely new. I feel like any comedian 10 years before or after him want to be him and are kind of jealous of like, I wish, like, I feel like so many of my friends in comedy saw Inside and they're like, that was amazing. And then like resentful pause. I could have done that. Well, yeah, you didn't.
I've heard that.
But it was amazing. I mean, I saw this like probably I think the day it came out because like he hadn't released something that was like a solo work in so long. And it was interesting to revisit because it is like it's really rewarding if you know how entrenched his career was in the internet. But it's also really rewarding if you were just inside for a year. So
that's cool. True. I got the sense that he was very online before this came out, which makes sense that he would be someone who would be seeing the kind of effects of that and documenting it maybe a little bit before the rest of us were.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I don't know. I wonder, and I think he like sort of touches on it in this, but like when he became internet famous in the mid-2000s, there wasn't really a lot of blueprint for like what that would do to a kid. Like there was a blueprint for child stardom, but like in this context where everyone has access to you all the time and you get like there's no way to really filter out feedback and you have this squishy brain and you're just trying to make funny stuff, like I can't imagine. And then, you know, there's like a creepy 14-year-old at a drama competition who's obsessed with it. Like, it seems,
well, we can all relate to that, you know? That's very relatable.
But that's why I think it really was one of the first sort of pieces of content that sort of dove into how the internet's really breaking our brain. Like today, it's like everyone's talking about that and has for the last several years.
Yeah.
Max and I were talking about before this, like it's weird to think that it was all the way back in 2021. And that it's like 3 years ago.
Right.
That's because it still seems like it was just like a couple months ago that it came out.
Yeah. We'll get into this, but the experience of I'd never seen this before, of watching this movie for the first time 4 years after he started, 3 years after he came out, was wild because it made me realize like, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Or it's starting to feel like a long time. And it's a very particular moment. And like, I will get in the categories in a second, but I think what to me this movie is really important because I don't think there's anything that captures so well what it feels like specifically to like live on the internet. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of like, you're constantly performing, you're chasing attention, you're constantly looking around and being like, am I doing the right thing? Do people like what I'm doing? Do they like me? Do they hate me? And it's like both kind of about and also a product of living online and like that cycle of doom scrolling and posting constantly. And so anyway, I'm excited to kind of get into like what that reflects for how we engage with the internet. So let's do the categories, guys, the big questions. So, okay. We're going to do a set of questions we do for every movie where we talk about like how it shapes how we see the world. And the first one, what is the biggest thing this movie gets right? John, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, there's one song he does, but like a little over halfway into the special that I think sort of nails for me what it gets right about the internet. It's maybe the best description of the internet that I've heard.
Here's a healthy breakfast option. You should kill your mom. Here's why women never fuck you. Here's how you can build a bomb. Which Power Ranger are you? Take this quirky quiz. Obama sent the immigrants to vaccinate your kids. Could I interest you in everything all of the time? A little bit of everything. All
is a tragedy and boredom is a crime. Anything and everything all of the time.
Yeah, so that's what the internet is. A little bit of everything all the time. I also liked the boredom is a crime, too, because that's, mm-hmm. we have talked about this a lot on the show, which is the idea that you're not allowed to be bored anymore.
Yeah.
And apathy is a tragedy. Like, you're supposed to care about everything all the time and voice mm-hmm. your opinion about just everything that happens, no matter whether you have expertise in that area or not. You're just always supposed to talk about it. You're supposed to care about everything mm-hmm. all the time. Everywhere.
I love that that comes halfway through the movie, too, because I feel like it really nicely captures this transition in what he's doing in the movie, which is, of course, capturing like what we were all going through in that time between up to then. He's tried to be productive. He's tried to be good. He's FaceTiming his mom. He's like trying to invent things. But we're right at the point where he starts to like really snap and starts to like really like have all this anxiety and he's like kind of off the walls. And it's like that is the moment when I think we all recognize that experience of like you deal with that by just chasing this constant dopamine rush on the internet.
Yeah.
So that really nicely captured that like arc of all of us going crazy in that period.
Yeah.
Jamie, what do you think? What did I get right?
Yeah, I was pausing this movie every 30 seconds just to try to kind of track what he was doing because I feel like he gets the experience of, you know, if you were inside for most of the pandemic, like the day-to-day just like dissociative aspect of it where it's like sometimes he is being goofy, sometimes he's being a bully for no reason, sometimes he's being deeply introspective and like, what do I need to say about the world? Should I say anything? Should I say nothing? Like, just it just felt so entrenched in like, and you could go through all of those mm-hmm. feelings and like, you know, desires in the space of a day, just staring at your phone. I feel like he captured that perfectly and also managed to do it without getting so incredibly specific in the day to day that you felt like you were being dragged back into a news cycle against your will. Like mm-hmm. he captured the feeling without turning it into a documentary. I guess you could argue that it's that, but I don't think it is. It feels like he's just trying to capture this feeling from his perspective as best he can. And it's really cool. And it also, it like was kind of, I had to like go on a walk afterwards because I had to like remember that like I can do that.
It's you okay. are allowed to go outside.
Yeah, I was tempted. I was truly tempted to go to a bar afterwards just to be like, because this is allowed now and I can do this. And it doesn't matter if I'm alone. There's people here. like he really captured it because it puts a pit in your stomach to watch certain sections.
It really does.
It does.
Yeah. The thing that really gave me that feeling every time that it's like between a song and he's like setting up lights or something, or he's like trying to get something to work and he's like cursing at himself. And I like know that's in there for effect,
sure.
but that feeling of like bouncing off the walls and like struggling to find the next thing to do in the pandemic is like really brought me back.
It also, I mean, not just a pandemic thing, but like the struggle to be creative by yourself.
Yeah.
Just like it brought me back to writing, when I was doing speech writing and I would just be like alone in an office forever and staring at a screen and you start going nuts and you're like, I'm terrible. I can't do this. And this is, you know, that it captures that really
there's
well.
There's a moment where he's sitting on the floor. I can't remember what song he's playing. He's playing a song on the keyboard and he starts it and he'd like, oh fuck, I breathed too loud. I have to start it over. And he keeps it in. And I was like, yes, that's the most relatable thing I've ever seen. It's just like getting really mad at yourself for like fucking something up on mic for a second.
Yeah, just filling dead air with I'm a piece of shit is like just so inherent. You're like, yeah, I have a moment to myself. Like in the second you look away from your phone, you're like, well, I'm awful. Like, and it's like he, I don't know, like it he sells it and it makes me sad because it's like, dude, you're Bo Burnham. You're the best.
But, I know.
But I just, I don't know. Yeah. Like I like that he includes those like little moments. Mm-hmm. Of hating how you breathe. That's also the plight of the podcaster, too.
Yeah.
Just being like, why do I breathe like shit? Why are my breaths so wet?
Like, why did I say the word like 20 times during that episode? It wasn't necessary.
Well, this is something I thought he also, he got right in how he portrayed it, is this like crippling sense of self-consciousness that was so specific to that moment, where it was like everything that everybody was voicing in their policy, where he's like, I'm a white guy commenting on race and I'm self-conscious about that, but I'm still doing it, but I'm self-conscious about being self-conscious about it. And like, I'm sorry, but also I still want to have a funny song. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like that really captured that specific zeitgeist of like 2020 in a way that's so fucking annoying.
I took a note that it was that it nails the performative progressive virtue signaling that really peaked in 2021, right, as it came out. And I feel like it's sort of on the downslope since then. But at one point he has a chart when he's talking about like healing the world with comedy, mm-hmm. and he has a chart about like lives saved, comedians, teachers. It's like, yeah, that's a real.
He's very funny at poking fun at himself, but there's also a certain like preemptive defensiveness about it that feels very 2020 progressive virtue signaling, where it's like, look, you can't be mad at me. You can't criticize me because I'm already criticizing myself for like taking myself too seriously.
And then he'll sort of like, I thought it was interesting. I don't know. I didn't remember it from the first time I'd seen it, but where he's commenting on the commentary video and the commentary video, like the infinity loop, which is like, it also feels, I don't know, all of this feels so specific to 3 years ago, but it feels like a million years ago. I feel like he's acknowledging when he's being deflective and reflexive, but then it still comes back. And like, it's, I don't know. It's interesting watching him sort of try to thread that needle, especially for Bowheads, where he's singing the song about his past content sins, which is stuff he said when he was 16 years old. And I can confirm it's autobiographical because I knew every single thing he was talking about. He's referencing his 20-year-old YouTube videos in that. And so it's like, I thought it was interesting. Like, there were certain moments where he was getting deeply autobiographical, and you could know that or not and still sort of get the gist of what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And then there were other moments where I was like, is he talking about himself here? Like, I don't know. There were moments where I wasn't sure, but it didn't take away from it. I don't know.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But it was kind of part of that deflective, signally, but self-conscious, like progressive way of talking in that moment, which like, I felt like I noticed that even more than the feeling of being transported back to the pandemic. Like, I thought I was going to watch this and be like, oh, it's going to be weird to be back in lockdown in 2020. But I feel like what I really noticed, like, wow, in 2020, we really had a weird way of talking about everything. Like, our discourse was so stupid.
Things got a little out of hand. That's what I...
So I actually have a clip I would play on that because I think it's one of the moments that I think is interesting because it captures how he talked in that moment. And I'm really not sure if he's like skewering it, commenting on it, or if he is just embodying it. Yep. Do you know? I know exactly what you're...
I don't know.
Which is part of the point. Yeah. So we're going with my boy, Sacco.
What can I do to help? Read a book or something. I don't know. Just don't burden me with the responsibility of educating you. It's incredibly exhausting.
I'm sorry, Sacco. I was just trying to become a better person.
Why do you rich fucking white people insist on seeing every socio-political conflict through the myopic lens of your own self-actualization? This isn't about you. So either get with it or get out of the fucking way.
So, like, is he making fun of himself? Is he actually participating in this? Like,
I thought it was too on the nose.
It was a little on the nose.
For it to be serious.
Right.
Like, I thought he was skewering that kind of... It's too much of a... It's a burden on me to educate you kind of...
Which was
very 2020.
Which is very 2020. But it feels a little bit like one of the ones where he's like... edging out of like commenting on it's so weird how we all want to prove we're one of the good ones to like he's trying to prove a little bit that he's one of the good ones.
right Whereas I don't know, that sketch is interesting because it's like I feel like there's parts of him in both of those characters, and so it's like hard to know who he, because obviously the way that actual physical non-Sacco Bow ends that is like really aggressive and horrible and like and, which is like a funny way to end that, but and Sacco did nothing wrong. Sacco
had some points, it must be said.
Sacco, I mean, they were broad but they were true. And I don't know,
the power dynamic in the end won out, that's sort of what I got from the end, right? Sacco's making all these points and can be very annoying, but at the end of the day, even if you're annoyed by that, he can shut it up.
I thought you were going to say that Sacco really needs to learn to persuade people and needs to learn about the value of door knocking.
Well, that is exactly what was my first thought when he was like, oh, my burden of educating you. I was like, okay, well, do you want to live in a fucking democracy or not?
Well, I think we're going to get a chance to get into that because I believe Sacco is guest hosting on PSA, right? Is that in May, Sacco is going to be coming on?
What's Sacco's history with direct action? Not really
Sacco,
clear.
Do the work, Sacco. Not enough to post. One other thing I thought the movie got right in this way that like was really kind of prescient was mm-hmm. this monologue that he has towards the end where he's talking about, let me just read from it. All human interaction should be contained in the much more safe, much more real interior.
I was just going to read this.
Oh, really? Okay, take it away.
No, do it. I'm just excited that you are.
The outside world, the non-digital world, is merely a theatrical space in which one stages and records his content. For the much more real, much more vital digital space, one should only engage with the outside world as one engages with a coal mine. Suit up, gather what is needed, and return to the surface. Wow. That one hit me, folks. I felt that one.
Well, because at the moment, it's ostensibly about the pandemic, right? Like, you go outside. But really, it's just the whole way the internet is, right? We're all just walking around, but we got to be in our phones.
We're just looking for content.
And the real good stuff happens on the internet.
Yeah. That's why I feel like Bo Burnham is the perfect person to make that observation, because who would know better than him?
That's true. Right.
Who has been through every iteration, or has been at least pressured to adapt to every iteration of the internet. And like, part of what I love about him is that once he was in a position, like, you know, in finances, power, whatever it was, like, he opted out. Like, he only makes what he wants to make, and he only talks when he feels like he has something to say. Like, he opted out of that attention economy once he was, which is like a lucky thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
I would love to shut the fuck up.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
You know? Thank you. Where's the part where women are silenced on the show? Because I kind of relish it sometimes.
That comes in post-production?
Oh, yeah. Got it.
It'll come when we discuss your Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, my white woman's Instagram.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it. Yeah. But I just like that metaphor of like the world, the real world is the coal mine that you suit up to go into. I was like, wow, I feel a little implicated.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And I also thought it was so, it made me like really curious about like if there was were going to come out now, what would be different with that? Because I feel like now I was like watching that part and I was really thinking about like all of the people who were either medically or psychologically impacted by the pandemic in a way that like it's still hard for them to go out a lot. And it like really felt like it brought an extra layer to that that I know I'm sure he didn't intend at the time.
You know, I took the whole thing as so much, even though it came out during the pandemic and it was like a pandemic piece of content, I felt like it was much more about the internet than the pandemic.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
For sure.
But that's so to your point about like people who, like, he didn't do too much of we're stuck inside, we're doing this. It was a lot more like we're stuck inside the internet kind of.
But it makes it, I think you're right, but it makes it a really compelling metaphor that he's talking about thinking about the outside world that way through the internet at a time we were thinking about it that way, real because
that's
of the pandemic. All right. What's the smallest thing this movie gets right? Like weird little stuff you noticed that you thought like, oh, that's a pretty good little observation. I've got one. I really related to the absolute painstaking energy he put into framing and blocking himself on little Zoom cameras. Like, I really took me back to like, oh yeah, I only exist to the outside world as I do on this Zoom camera, so I really have to think about the lighting on it really hard.
The woke brand consultant.
Oh yeah.
Who are you, Bagel Bites?
I mean, that was your life, right?
I was going to say, like, I have sat in meetings with brand consultants that are like, the parody is actually not that much of a parody that he did. Like, I have
really
heard, oh yeah, I was once
what was the one that
I was once with a brand consultant, Tommy was with me too, and this guy was like, someone was talking about sound or something, and we're trying to figure out like a slogan for this company or like a narrative, message narrative. He goes, you know, I hadn't thought about that. Sound is an interesting vector to concept around. We're like, an interesting vector to concept. What the fuck are you talking about?
I've been in marketing meetings where they talk about concepting as a verb, and it definitely makes you want to walk into the
seat. You just go, and like the PowerPoint presentations and the whole thing about like, who do you want to be? What, it's not just enough to sell things anymore. It's like, it's about your values. It's about kindness. The world wants kindness right now. So let's sell Wheat Thins.
I have always kind of suspected that the purpose of those, and like, please stop me if I'm getting too close to home, but like the purpose of those consultancies was not to improve the image or perception of a company, but rather to make the people in the meeting feel good.
Yeah, but they
is
also,
that too
they,
cynical?
No, I think that they think that it's actually helping the company. It's helping improve the image of the company. Like, they buy it. I think they desperately want the company to be mission driven, and so they think that the new branding will make the company mission driven and not the thing that you do. right? Like, so instead of focusing actually on the work of being a mission-driven company or your philanthropy or whatever else, if you could just talk about it differently, then not only will it help your brand, but it will help you feel like you're doing a good job.
And then you have a consultant who's reassuring you that, like, now you're saving the world, now you're part of justice.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, that
and again,
sense.
Something that really, really peaked in 2020, 2021.
I wish that brand consultants would, maybe they just wouldn't agree to talk to me because they're, I had an experience, like, it would have been in 2021 where we got a podcast ad that it was like, and they always come during, like, Women's History Month, and they're like, it was working in marketing for, it was like not Lysol, but something like Lysol. And they just sort of sent an email that were like, hey, we're Lysol. We bought a bunch of ads on your show. Could you make it about women? Thank you. The ads should be 30 seconds. And we were like, yeah.
So what cut to the next ad break.
That's right.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What is the biggest thing the movie gets wrong? I can, unless someone has one they want to jump in, I can start us off with the big one, white women's Instagram. I feel like we got to talk about white women's Instagram.
Coffee table made out of driftwood, a bobblehead of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a needlepoint of a fox, some random quote from Lord of the Rings, incorrectly attributed to Martin Luther King. Is this heaven, or am I looking at a white woman, a white woman's Instagram?
Okay, it's funny, but I feel like it's not aged great. Am I wrong? Am I being a buzzkill?
What white women are you following? I was seeing a different.
What do you think, Jamie? I don't want to get all down on it if I'm totally alone.
No, I agree with you. But I also feel weird about feeling that way. I was pausing a lot during this one because like the visuals are really funny.
It's very funny.
Clearly captured a very, very specific aesthetic. Like, and I think the aesthetic he's talking about is a lot of white women, but I also think he is actually talking about basic women.
I think that there
is a tendency sometimes, especially when it comes from a cis white guy, yeah, where it's just like, I think that he adds the qualifier of white women, even though I do believe he's mainly talking about white women. I think he adds the qualifier of white women because it sounds bad if you just say women.
Right.
And like, I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the visuals of it. A lot of the specific gags are very funny, but I don't know. I was in a whole debate about it with my boyfriend where I'm like, first of all, check my account. You will not find it. And got first. So as a white woman, I grew defensive. But I think, like, I don't know. And then adding the little twist at the end of that song where it's like, mm-hmm, but I just felt like the moral of that song was like, women I don't respect are people too. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about the mom was dark.
Yeah.
What was that?
That was
interesting. Where he goes on this long thing about, like, mom, it's been so long. Like, clearly someone writing a message about their mom.
Yeah,
that
they, right. Yeah.
And then he goes right back to making fun of her, which is kind of funny.
It is funny.
It's like very pandemic era bullying, too, yeah, where it's like, I recognize that you're a person, but I can't stand you. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I felt like.
I took it to be more. You're right. It was too general by calling it white women's Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's really like resistance white women libs.
Sure.
Yeah, like that sort of.
Sure.
Like the Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, I mean, I think you either need to like broaden it or narrow it like that.
Yeah.
And it just is like, it felt like very of 2020, where we're talking about white women specifically in a way that it like kind of presented as being anti-racism, but it's like maybe we're just a little bit doing misogyny sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it felt like there was a weird crossover of like, I understood what he was trying to do. I don't think he had any like malicious intent, but
sure.
I also totally get why that didn't work for people.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like a very like, white women are so frivolous like discourse in 2020 that I think we have moved past. That feels like very post like Central Park encounter, very like summer 2020. Mm. Okay, what else? What else did he get wrong?
Ooh, I don't want to criticize Mr. Bo. I love him.
It's all coming from a place of love.
It is. The thing that ticked for me when I first saw it and did now is that, like, I understand why he needs to some extent for the aesthetics of this movie, but he's in the guest house of his mansion. He's not, like, this is filmed in his guest house. Bo Burnham does not live in a studio apartment for a year, but I feel like the aesthetics of this movie want you to believe he lives in a studio apartment. There's a bed there. All his shit is there. We never see him leave, but ostensibly at the end of the day, he goes back to his mansion with his partner, who he had been with for many years. And like, that's fine. I understand that, but it just felt a little, it always chafed a little bit for me of like, it felt almost like a little bit of like stolen valor where it's like, he's going through the same set of, you know, mental strain and losing your mind and getting sucked into your phone. But just I don't know, there felt like a little bit of like trying to shift the ways, especially because there are sections where he is trying to confront his privilege, but in the studio apartment set that he's pretending he lives in. So that always like just kind of bugged me and still bugged me on this watch.
I get the sense there was a lot of discourse around that, like when it came out.
Really? I don't know. I don't remember.
I didn't notice that.
I was like Googling around and I encountered kind of the detritus of 2021 discourse about like, I didn't mind. I get what you're saying. I didn't mind it as much, but I do get the point that it's like, if he's presenting inside as like his suffering is our suffering and he's actually got it a little bit easier.
Right.
That is genuine, but.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, but I also understand why he's doing that. And it also feels like it references back to how his career started, which was also in a very small room by himself. Like, it makes sense, I think, in like the broad scheme of what he's trying to do. But I feel like there maybe was a way to just reference the fact that, like, this is not his home, where
you could address it with a line.
It's funny. It's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that before. I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying about like it to me was less about being stuck in the pandemic and than more about like being stuck in your own head. And so it was more like you didn't have to know that he was living there to get the aesthetic. But I know it's an interesting point. Yeah. I thought about that.
I think I did take the ADU as mostly like the experience of interiority in this time.
Like freaky liminal space.
Yes.
Right.
And it works as that too. And that same house also appears at the end of his last special, Make Happy, Bowheads Will Know. So again, very rewarding for Bowheads. But
are you going to be on the Bowhead discourse later, answering any
I'm
questions?
I'm going to get torn to shreds on r/Bowheads.
It would have been very like of the special though to make a joke about his mansion next door.
It's true.
Right.
Like,
right.
What a bit.
Right. Like, very, next door is my mansion and someone who loves me so much. Which is like, great. I don't begrudge him that, but I don't know. But I think, it like goes into what you're saying, John, of like, this is, it's more of a sort of manifestation of being trapped in the internet and not just a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any big things.
Okay.
I really struggled. I wanted to find one, and then I'm like, why am I looking for a for a big criticism if I don't have one?
Ruin a
am
movie
I a bad
that you
critic?
Love
Maybe. For... I don't know. There's a small thing. Small thing is, and this might just be a personal thing, I don't think turning 30 is when you get to have an existential crisis. You got to at least wait till 40.
I would say I had a tiny one when I got there.
I was
there.
Like, so at 30, I was like, great, 30.
I did. I loved turning 30, but I didn't do it in the pandemic, so it was easier. Mm.
I saw this came out before I turned 30, and then I'm over 30 now. So I was like, if when I first saw it, I think that provoked some severe anxiety in me. I'm like, what? It's so I've time. The whole year of 27 has been stolen from me. and then watching it now, you're like, man, he's fine.
You're
like,
he's
Bo Burnham. He's
It's definitely just me being old, but I was like, because then it like really gut me. I'm like, I'm fucking 42 now. All right. How do you think I feel?
Yeah.
I actually have pains and existential angst.
Yeah. When he was being really upset about not being in his 20s anymore. It was like, all right, buddy. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay.
You're going to be okay. Yeah.
Give it 3 days. You're going to be thrilled.
All right. We're skipping a couple of categories because I think this is a big one for me. The moment you most related to personally. I mean, the entire movie, for sure. Every second of it. One that really resonated for me when he was talking about that, like, he took a few years off comedy because he was having panic attacks. And then he was like planning in January 2020 to come back. I think it had not occurred to me that we probably all have something like that, that we were really excited about in the weeks before the pandemic hit that we just like never got to have. Like I moved to New York right before the pandemic and was like so excited to live in New York and just like kind of never got it. And I think I'd like not really process that that's probably something we all went through, but like really related to it.
I mean... March of 2020, I was like, this is an election year, and we're going to go out on the road, and we're going to do all these live shows, and it's going to be so fun.
Yeah.
And then it was like, Emily's like, I'm pregnant, and also there's a pandemic. And I was like, we're going to have a much different 2020 than I expected. And also going to run the company from remotely, and everyone's going to... It was... I had thought about that. Okay.
Yeah.
My whole plan for 2020 was I'd spent all of 2019 working on a solo show. And 2020, I was going to tour it across the United States. Oh. And I was so excited. I'd like worked on it and worked
so
on
tough.
It. And then I mean, there was worse fates. I became a podcaster.
That was the detour into podcasting, really?
Yeah, well, I'd been doing a weekly podcast before that, but it wasn't like my main job.
Okay, sure.
But then all of a sudden it was like, well, this is the job. And all of a sudden people are actually listening to them. So like it was weird. But I mean, I'm grateful for how it turned out. But yeah, just, you know, compared to what I thought I would be doing that year, sitting, you know, I mean, no one expected to be sitting in their own disgusting juices for a whole year. Like, who sees that coming?
You put it that way.
Did not. Yeah. What else do we relate to?
Yeah.
There's a clip.
Yeah, this is a big Jon Favreau moment.
I just...
Is it necessary that every single person on this planet expresses every single opinion that they have on every single thing that occurs all at the same time? Is that necessary?
Yeah, so it goes
I was like,
on.
I forgot if he answered.
And you resonated for you because the answer is yes.
Well,
right? Because we got to hear
like,
the take.
I
first saw this, I was by myself when I saw it in my house. And I was like yelling at the TV when he said it. I was like, yes! No, what? Yeah, you got it. You nailed it. And yes, like I realized this is what we do for a living. But still, it captures how fucking annoying the internet had become by that year, and social media and Twitter especially, which was, you know, my drug of choice. But it was like, anything that happened anywhere, the new rule was like, everyone has an opinion. Expert, not expert, experience with it, no experience. Everyone has an opinion all the time. Everyone's an expert on everything.
Yeah, for all the stuff in the movie where it's like the degree of it has been amped down a little bit since we left the pandemic, this is one where it feels like it's only grown.
Yep, and only
it's like
worse.
The like pressure that everyone feels to weigh in on everything all of the time, and how we all agree that that sucks, but also we still all feel that pressure individually. We feel trapped in it. Mm-hmm. It's like definitely still going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like, I mean, I think he kind of starts at this place and then comes back to it later in the movie. But just the idea, and I think that this is an enduring thing, too, of like, is it okay if I try to have fun in my work? Yeah. Is that like, which is definitely like a thing where, I mean, I think of how poisoned my brain was at that time, where I would see like other comics online just posting a joke and I'm like, they should really be using that space for, and then it was like, well, but do they know what they're talking about? Like, what is the best use of everyone's time? Right. How can you like contribute? What is it, what are you supposed, like him just like navigating that, like, I'm a comedian, and comedians, in spite of how many times people try to make them into like philosophers or even like literate, it doesn't always happen. And that's like, okay, it's not the, like, it's just, I don't know. I thought that kind of cycling thought, but also being like having in the back of your mind, like, but if I can, I should, but I don't know how and when, and is it just like, you know, filling a room with hot air, just being like, I agree as well. Like I feel like we're still navigating stuff like that all the time. And he doesn't have an answer for it, which I also found refreshing, because I feel like sometimes at the end of those, like, I sort of expected that monologue that you pulled the clip from to end with like,
turning and to the camera,
figured it out. Right, yeah. Like, but no one is going to figure it out.
No, it is. It's politics infusing everything.
Right.
And so every time something happens, everyone feels like they are like an elected official that must put out a statement, like a release a statement from their press office. Right. Here's what I believe about this. And here's what I say. And like brands did it. And like you said, like comedians feel like they have to do it. Athletes have to do it. And everyone has to have an opinion on every political or news development. It's like, no, they don't.
Yeah.
I think, it's like him trying to figure out, like, how do I use my voice, like, responsibly and, like, intentionally, and also still tell a joke. He just wants to tell a joke. And
sometimes that's okay too. It's just only a joke.
That's right. But you can tell that he feels apologetic about it.
Right. Which feels very of that era, but also still there's like a feeling of like, how do you adapt?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just feel like anyone who pretends they have it figured out, like, either like drop the cheat code or stop pretending, because no one's figured it out.
This is a quick one. I really related to when he was talking about, you know, the woe is me for turning 30. One point that he made that did really resonate with me is when he was like lamenting the fact that he is no longer going to get attention for being the youngest person in the room.
Yeah.
Like, that was me. Like, I'm sure a bunch of like front row A students in the room, like, that was me for a long time. And people would always be like, wow, you're so young to be doing this job or in this space. And I remember the specific moment when there was fucking Patrick Kingsley, who is like 6 years younger than me, was in the room, and he was getting the attention for being younger. And I was like, wow, it's over. I'm just old now.
Yeah.
I'm just another one of the guys. Like, the first time I was like on a stand-up lineup where there was someone who was like 25, you're like, yeah, right. Like, it's scary. And I also think that him like responding to that by getting defensive and being like, well, one day you'll be old too, is like,
oh, that was the best. Yeah, when he said, now all these fucking Zoomers are telling me that I'm out of touch. Oh yeah, well, your fucking phones are poisoning your mind. So when you develop a dissociative mental disorder in your late 20s, don't come crawling back to me. That's how I was like,
that's actually,
and they will.
That's most crooked media staff meeting. So it's
I went from being like, oh, youngest White House speechwriter, to like, my staff thinks I have the politics of Mitt Romney.
it's a weird moment when you go from, because you get so used to like, I'm the young one, I'm the left wing one, to all of a sudden there's someone who's like, and that's why you just gotta But you got to stamp them out.
It's the natural order.
Yeah.
What would be different if this came out today? Like, kind of weird ones is like there's no pandemic, but some of this stuff I feel like he would put differently. White women Instagram, he would say basic women.
Yeah, I think there would be tweaks. And I think maybe just like, it's, I don't know if the questions he's asking would be different, but probably I can't even put my finger on like the cadences would be different. The specifics would be different because they feel so rooted in 2020,
super
2021
specific moment.
Brand. Yeah.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I was wondering if it might reflect more of the like splintered parties over vibe of social media, where it's become like a bit more of a wasteland now. And so it's a little more desperate. And also like he's good about not getting into politics too much. Mm-hmm. He does mention like Bezos and Zuckerberg, just small thing, but you'd imagine like an Elon Musk reference in there.
That's true.
If it was today and some kind of a, you know, what's like a little more of the Nazis have invaded social media kind of thing, just because that's a bigger deal now than it was then.
Yeah.
That was my only thought.
Yeah.
I loved the Jeff Bezos, you did it, runner.
The recurring Jeff Bezos song was really something special. I kept thinking, like, how would this be different post-TikTok? Like, would there be a song about, like, diagnosing people with made-up mental disorders? Like, I feel like some way you'd have to try to, like, wrestle with it because it's so huge now. And I was really kind of feeling its absence. I was like, this is really pre-TikTok internet that he's talking about.
Or at least pre, like, everyone using TikTok.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I guess it was around.
Like mass adaptation. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like the most modern he edged up to was Twitch. And also not to like call out my boyfriend was like, he's got Twitch all wrong. I'm sure he does.
Now he knows how it feels after going after white women's Instagram.
Yeah. I was
now
like,
we're going after
how do you think
the boys on Twitch?
The boys on Twitch are being persecuted by Bo Burnham.
Yeah, that's probably what it would be different. There would probably be a little bit more careful selection about like who we're singling out and probably gamers. are going to get a mention.
The gamers need to answer for their crimes.
That's true.
I feel like there would definitely be less white guy commenting on the experience of feeling weird about being a white guy commenting on race while also still being a white guy commenting on race.
Yes.
Like we don't do that one so much anymore.
Yeah. No.
I wouldn't say I miss that.
I'm
okay with it.
I didn't love it when it was happening.
Yeah.
The one really true thing he says that sort of references that is when he says, self-awareness does not absolve anyone of anything.
Yeah,
right.
That
was a pretty good.
It was a good.
Although I think it gives you a little credit.
It's progress.
Yeah.
Not much progress, but it's progress. It's a step in the right direction.
With self-awareness, I feel like, sometimes you're like, well, at least he feels like shit about himself. At least he has the dignity to feel.
That's how I feel. Okay, well, that is a nice lead in to our last segment, because that was going to be one of my choices for true or false.
Ooh.
So true or false is where I will read out a series of rapid fire quotes or plot points from the movie, and you tell me if it's true or false. Are we ready?
So ready.
True or false, it's a very exciting time to be a brand, but also a scary time. I think
now it's false.
Yeah, I think false. I think the brands are doing fine.
The brands have gotten over.
They're
it.
Not
they
scared
don't care
anymore.
Anymore.
Yeah,
false. Yeah, they can double down on whatever at this point.
Dewey, a sub true or false? True or false? J.P. Morgan is against racism in theory. I'm also gonna say false.
I don't know that
they're affirmatively for it, but if they said they were against it,
I don't think they would go out of their way to say they were against it.
I don't know if I can even characterize the entity that is JP.
that's how they like it. That's the brand consultant that they really
exactly.
wanted.
Yes.
True or false, if you drew a Venn diagram, as Bo Burnham does in this movie, with Weird Al Yankovic on one side and Malcolm X on the other, the overlap would be Bo Burnham.
I think that's false, and he meant it to be false. I think.
Yeah.
I think it's Randy Newman. I think Randy's up in there.
I mean, I love Weird Al, but I feel like Randy Newman's a more apt pick. What I'm saying is he's Randy Newman in Malcolm X.
That's right. Well, I thought about it, and I decided this movie is the Venn diagram of Hamilton and crooked media.
Wow.
That's very funny.
True or false, the scariest part of turning 30 is realizing now you have to think about the day when you're going to turn 40.
True, actually. Yeah. That was part of my gripe. Yeah.
Yeah, that rated true for me.
Yeah.
I thought that was the scariest part.
Interesting. I would say false, but I appreciated the part that came after that where he's like, when I'm 40, I'm going to kill myself. And then, and then spent the next 2 minutes being like, but I definitely wouldn't and you shouldn't, but like, I get it. Like, that part I connected with.
That was really good.
Yeah.
I love the way he shot that too, the projected on his shirt. There's some really creative choices.
Very creative.
Really cool.
He's a great
I really
director.
Loved that.
Of all the things in his, like, because he leaves out a lot of, because he's like, he makes it sound like he did nothing between 2016 and 2021. He like directed Eighth Grade. He directed all these great comedy specials.
Yeah, in the same period?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 2018.
Wow.
He directed like a lot of really, he directs, I think, a bunch of stand, he directed a Chris Rock special. Like, he directs a lot. Wow. He's a really good director, but he's not super loud about it. But I was like, yeah, he knows what he's doing. He's great.
Okay. True or false, the internet in 1999 was, quote, catalogs, travel blogs, and a chat room or two.
I think true.
I thought about it. I think half true. I think we forgot about, first of all, stock images, really big in 99. We forgot about piracy. That was at least
was
half 99? Of the internet
in
99.
I guess that was
Napster. And we forgot about GeoCities.
Angel Fire vibes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. We had some MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
I think give the 99 internet its due. True or false, FaceTiming boomer moms hold their iPhone 5s no further than 6 inches from their faces.
True.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's scientifically proven, I believe.
I think true, but I felt like Android-owning moms were really erased in this narrative. My mom has an Android, and so I would have to set up Google meetings for us, and then she would have it on her computer and her phone, and it would start making that scary sound that the devices make when they're too close together.
God, I'm so glad that Microsoft didn't make a phone, and we didn't have to spend the pandemic trying to Teams each other
over
the phone.
Bad. My parents have iPads, so the FaceTiming with the iPad iPads like you're seeing them, like you're just seeing them from the bottom up, and they're like very close. They're tens, and I'm just like, guys, wait, move it.
And now
Charlie FaceTimes with him, my 3-year-old, and he's not holding it right. So just like the conversation between him and my parents is just a mess. I don't know anyone understands each
other. I know we always talk about. I hate to do millennial supremacy on this podcast. However, welcome to the Millennial Supremacy Podcast, the only generation that knows how to correctly FaceTime. Okay, true or false, stand-up comedy sets over Zoom are, and this is not the comedian's fault, and I'm so sorry if I'm implicating you, but a fucking bummer. They're really
true,
rough.
True. Some of the most traumatic.
I remember logging into a couple, like, right after, it's like, we have to support comedians. And I was like, that's great. I want to help people out. And it just, like, watching people in their kitchens try to, like, get laughs while people stare at them up from the fishbowl in the Zoom. It's just.
It was real. And then, because I was trying to go and support my friends, and they were they're like, unmute your mic, laugh real loud. So I'm like in my bedroom being like, and like clapping like a seal, and everyone's just like, well, so I want to die today. Like, this is bad. This is really bad. I went through like a period of a lot of props, and so like on one of the Zoom shows, I had ordered this fake katana, and I was like, I'm not going to talk about depression. I'm going to use this katana. And I sliced my couch open, and then
deliberately?
No, I just
wasn't the bit.
No. I didn't know how to wield a katana. It turned out in my one bedroom apartment.
Wow,
so funny.
I really hope you don't have any swords in your home anymore.
I don't, but I still have the same couch, and all the cushions are flipped because the other ones are katana sliced.
Wow. Okay.
Bad time.
All right. True or false, John, I'm hoping you can field this one for us. As a former Obama administration insider, quote, Obama sent the immigrants to vaccinate your kids.
I mean, not successfully.
Yeah.
He tried.
Yeah.
We
needed more funding from Congress on that one.
As you can see, the vaccinations did not take off with everyone. So, failure.
I kind of wish he had. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. Last true or false. True or false, quote, maybe allowing giant digital media corporations to exploit the neurochemical drama of our children for profit. Maybe that was a bad call by us. Maybe the flattening of the entire subjective human experience into a lifeless exchange of value that benefits nobody except a handful of bug-eyed salamanders in Silicon Valley. Maybe that is a way of life forever. Maybe that's not good. True or false? What do we think?
I think that's a big true.
I'm gonna go with true.
When he said that, as he started saying that, when I was watching last night, I just typed Max.
that's the book. He just tweeted it out.
I know it's true, but every time he would launch into a monologue about why the internet was bad, I would reflexively grab my iPad.
Oh, he's like, Bo's going to take it away.
And I would open a mobile game and be like, well, how would I play Homescape if you took that away? So consider.
I do love the idea that Bo Burnham is going to personally reach out of the Netflix app and take your phone
away
from
you. Yes.
Yeah, no, I can see it.
He's right, but I need my little games.
As he was saying that, I was like, come on, we get it. We all know. And then he got to calling people in Silicon Valley bug-eyed salamanders, and I was like, you got me back. You got me. All right, folks. Well, that was the Offline Movie Club. Bo Burnham Inside. What a blast. Really
so
enjoyed discussing this with you all.
It was really fun watching it again, too. I highly recommend everyone go watch it.
If you have not seen it, take it from me. It is a wild ride to come into it 4 years later.
Yeah. And I think it's been just enough time now that you won't be quite catapulted back into the existential depression of the time. I don't think I could have rewatched this last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
I agree. Yeah. The only one I had a hard time with was FaceTiming the mom. But other than that, I thought it was great. All right, Jamie, we'll catch you on 16th Minute.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Offline is a Crooked Media production. Our movie club episodes are written and hosted by me, Max Fisher. The show is produced by Austin Fisher. Emma Illich Frank is our associate producer. It's mixed and edited by Charlotte Landis. Audio support from Jordan Cantor and Kyle Seklin. Kenny Siegel and Jordan Katz wrote our show's original theme music, and the remixed movie-specific bangers you hear at the top of each movie club are composed by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Thanks to Ari Schwartz, Madeline Herringer, and Reed Cherlin for production support.